This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Crank this up a little bit. It's a karaoke version of Sir Duke. Morning. Speaking of karaoke, John DeCoste, musical director of the show, man tomorrow, and I keep saying we're going to announce karaoke. And we'll update you on how my lawsuit with James Corden is going. But karaoke is where John has his annual sing-along contest in the car.
Yes, but you've been doing this for a long time. So
since
if anybody...
50s, and I wasn't even born then.
Yeah, so if anyone stole it, he stole it from you.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're suing Corden.
Yeah.
At 6:10 in the morning, I mentioned Patrick Kane will be on later, and the Max Armstrong will be on later. Is Orion going to be joining us as well?
You will?
Yeah, okay, Orion will be
yeah.
on as well. And we're going to try to work through as many of the folks who are willing to do the show as possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't say that everybody on the Walk of Fame will do this show. You know, but we're hopeful.
Peterson will do it. I'm thinking.
Peterson's
maybe.
Actually doing news for Eric and Kathy.
No, he's
yeah,
not.
So good for him.
He's retired.
Speaking of radio, Doug Banks died yesterday, and it was frankly a shock. I did not know Doug well at all, but every time we crossed paths for the last 20 plus years, he's just a fabulous guy. And there was a bit of a mutual admiration society when he was kicking my ass. He was very nice about that. But he was also a guy who I just got. By the way, when he was on GCI in the 90s was a great radio station.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had Joyner, you had Doug Banks, you had Mike Love and a Diz, and maybe the best night show in America at that point. It was a great radio station, and V103 is a great radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Harvey got his start on radio with Doug Banks. Banks is the guy that put Harvey on.
Oh, you Banks know, is the one?
Yeah, Banks would put Harvey on doing stand-up. And then somebody over there in that whatever that company was at that point, and who knows, DeCastro probably owned it.
He probably did.
But somebody recognized that Harvey was pretty good and that Harvey could do radio. Now Harvey has every job in show business. But Doug Banks was one of those people, you know, you hear eulogies all the time, and you'll hear people, if you haven't already, talking about, oh, he's a great guy, he was such a nice guy, he was so great. You'll hear people, when people die, say nice things about other people. I'm telling you, that's all genuine. Everybody I ever came into contact with, because he was one of those people that was terminally positive. I wished I had some of that.
Yeah, no
or at least more of that. Because he was always upbeat, he was always positive. He had a great connection to the audience, and he was a great entertainer. And to die at 57 and to leave four kids and his wife, I mean, it's just tragic.
He was great on 190 North, too. Remember
yeah, it was really
when
good.
He was a contributor?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A friend of mine was a photographer on 190 North for a very long time. She said that's how he always was to everybody, photographers, producers, behind-the-scenes people who don't get a ton of recognition.
He's a good man.
Yeah. And great you
know,
guy.
You know something? He was not only number one as a person, but did you see Feeder, Robert Feeder, who writes about media in Chicago, just posted the ratings from last month.
Oh, he kicked butt.
Guess who was number one?
Yeah, he kicked butt for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember first conversations I had with him after I came to town. I think at that point we had the same agent, and I saw him at that office, and... I go, maybe he's up on me. I'm new. And he goes, oh, you're going to beat me. You're going to beat me. Never once. Never once. Not one time. But a great entertainer and, more importantly, a better person.
Heard Roe talking about him yesterday, and Roe said he was a mentor to him.
To Roe? I did not know
yeah,
that.
Yeah. He was talking to a gentleman who ran the station, Marv Dyson.
Marv Dyson, yeah, good
was,
man.
Was on with Roe.
Good man,
and
Marv
it
Dyson.
Was, and was talking about him and said he was the nicest person he ever hired.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't doubt that. And that whole notion that you can't be nice and be successful in show business, well, he certainly killed that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So he will be missed. I wasn't even aware he was going through these health problems and suffering from significant complications due to diabetes and was off the air for a couple of months as recently as the end of last year and had fought his way back and was in town last week because he was syndicated for years. He was one of these guys that recognized the value of syndication long before anybody else did. And when Tom Joyner was flying from Dallas to Chicago and back, and Banks finally went, you know, you don't have to fly. he moved to Dallas I think, and he was in Dallas. He was in, I could be wrong about this, but maybe Florida as well, but I know he was in Dallas. And Joyner ended up in Dallas as well. But, you know, he had good weather and a big audience and a national platform. You know what it was ABC. ABC gave him a national show.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
But a really good guy. So everything you hear about Doug Banks is true, and it is a loss for everybody in the business, but mostly it's just a loss in general because we need to replace him now with somebody equally as good, and I don't know who that is.
I know.
Yeah, and our hearts go out to just everybody who works over there and just all of his family and friends. And
yeah, the V103 and GCI families, yeah. iHeartRadio people that knew him best.
Yeah.
So, RIP DB. Andrea, news, breaking news, but this is important.
Too. Yeah, it is. A couple of schools in Lake County, Indiana closed this morning. They are closed because of a bomb threat. This, according to Lake County Sheriff in Indiana. Three schools closed are Holman Elementary, that's in Schererville, Coling Elementary School, and Clark Middle School, both of those in St. John. They closed the schools as a precaution after receiving a threatening phone call. They're investigating that threat, but just as a precaution, again, three schools in Lake County, Indiana, Holman Elementary, Clark Middle, and the Coling Elementary School, also too on Wicker Avenue, all closed this morning, Steve.
My name is Michelle Darnell, and I am the wealthiest woman in America. How wealthy am I? I wanted to come down on a golden phoenix, and I sure as did it.
I run your operation.
While being a single mom,
I deserve a pay raise.
You have a child.
Yeah.
Was that through intercourse?
Yes.
You're under arrest for insider trading.
Michelle, don't struggle.
You're bankrupt. All your accounts have been frozen.
Claire, get me a new lawyer.
You don't have any money, you stupid ginger.
Well, clip from the boss there. Number one movie on the weekend, and that should be the only weekend it's number one. At 6:21, we love Melissa McCarthy. We just wanted to make better movies. Nick D. Show, no, just now, at Nick D. Show. Good morning, buddy.
How are you, man?
Isn't that true? Don't we just want, we love her. We just want her to make better movies.
Yeah, boy, is this one bad. She's got no one to blame but herself. She and her husband put it together. They co-wrote it, and her husband directed it. So there's no one to blame but herself on this one. It's just, she's an extraordinarily talented woman. She's very, very funny. She's gifted. But this is just bad. This is coasting at its worst. You know, remember the last one that they did together where he directed it was a film called Tammy?
Yeah, which is awful.
Oh, terrible. And this one is on the same level as that. A couple of funny moments. Peter Dinklage has some funny scenes in the film. But outside of that, this is just not good. And
you know, knowing a little bit about how this is done, if you're the biggest star in comedy and your husband really wants to direct, you have to do one of two things. You either have to let him direct, but make sure it's a great script and get him all the help that he needs, or you have to tell him, no, we got a pretty good life going here, and this is going to negatively impact what I've got going on, therefore what we've got going on, so no, you can't direct. It's just got to be one of those two paths.
I'm with you 100%. Now, the guy's not without talent. He's very funny.
He is very funny.
He's in almost every movie that she's been in. For people who might not know who he is, he was the guy who played the air marshal in Bridesmaids, the guy who sat next to her on the plane in Bridesmaids.
Yep.
And that's a really hilarious scene. And
he's the guy looking for Popeyes or KFC and Spy.
Right. That's right. So, yeah, but no, this is just bad. And I will say this, though, the big story in the world of box office, though, is how nobody expected a Melissa McCarthy movie to unseat Batman versus Superman in its third week, and
right.
It did. It only beat it by a few hundred thousand bucks. But the big story here is the incredible drop in box office for Batman versus Superman from week to week. After its opening weekend, which did great numbers, the next week, its second weekend, last week dropped. The Batman versus Superman dropped 69.3%. Which is a massive drop.
How does that compare historically?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of them, but like this week, it's his third week. Between that drop and this week it dropped 54.5%. So it's dropping like a rock, this movie. But historically, I've got a list here of some of the movies that have dropped the most. Now, the number one movie that has the biggest drop-off between weeks is a movie that came out in 2008 that when I saw the title of it, and Steve, you know that I got a pretty good memory for movies, especially movies that only came out 8 years ago.
Yeah.
I had to look this up. Now, I'm going to give you the title, see if anybody remembers what this movie was and who's in it.
Okay.
Because now, when I looked it up, it has a huge star in it, a huge star. And I don't even remember. I remember seeing it. I didn't even remember it. But the name of the movie, see if you remember this, from 2008, the movie that has had the biggest drop in 1 week, it had a 77% drop, was Meet Dave.
Meet Dave.
Yeah, and it's not the Dave Bennett story.
Meet Dave. Not even close. I have no idea. Who's the star?
Eddie Murphy.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Okay. Oh, all right. Let me
so what, but what, it made $100 the first week and $30 the second? Is that how it dropped 70%?
Here's the other thing, Steve. It was pulled. It opened up in 3,000 theaters, this movie, and it was pulled from 2,300 on the second weekend.
And rightfully so.
But the movie, I didn't even remember it. I looked it up. Meet Dave. I'm like, what the hell is that? I look it up, and then I saw the poster for it, and suddenly the nightmare came back. Because it's like little miniature Eddie Murphy and a bunch of other miniature people are inside a giant Eddie Murphy.
I have no recollection of this. Not that plot, not that picture, none of it.
And the poster for the movie is Eddie Murphy looking blank and wacky with a little Eddie Murphy climbing out of big Eddie Murphy's ear.
You know, Melissa McCarthy should look at Eddie Murphy as a template of what not to do.
But I was like, okay, it'll be fun to talk about box office drops, and I didn't remember. The other one that came in, number two on the list, is Jonah Hex.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Which dropped 92% after its second week.
Wow.
And then just recently, there are two. The next one, number three and number four on this list, are recent ones, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which came out earlier this year.
I've got to tell you, I didn't see any of those, not any of the four you just mentioned.
How about this one? Did you see this one came out just at Christmas time? Ron Howard's last movie, that stupid whale movie, In the Heart of the Sea.
No, but I went out on Lake Michigan and sent a tribute to it and just had a miserable time. I figured it would be the same thing.
I think you had a better time, I got to tell you. Number five is the Johnny Depp movie from last year, Mordecai.
Yeah, no, I was considering going to that, and that's as close as I got because it looked like it might be funny. Turns out it wasn't.
It was okay. I don't think he deserved the kind of vitriol it got. And now the next one on the list, the next two on the list, I actually really like.
They are
both really tanked. Number six is The Rocker with Rainn Wilson as the would be rock drummer.
Yeah, I remember that. Didn't see it.
Okay, and then number seven, and I backed this movie. I don't care. I consider it one of the best SNL movies ever made. MacGruber.
You know, he was on, Will Fort was, he was on with us last week. He's a great guy.
He was?
Yeah, Will Forte was on with us last week. And MacGruber, the movie, I've heard him, we didn't talk about it, but I've heard him talk about it in other interviews. It kind of hurt his feelings that nobody went to see it.
I thought it was great. And I remember thinking, well, how are they going to make a movie out of this bit? Because every bit is 90 seconds long and it always ends with everybody blowing up.
Yeah, exactly.
How are they going to do this? And I thought it was hysterical, and I still think it's hysterical. So, but that's the other one. And then rounding out the top ten, The Seeker, The Dark is Rising, and Black Hat, which was the Chris Hemsworth, Michael Mann disaster from last year.
Did you, Andrea, see any of this?
No.
Not one of them?
No.
You go to a lot of movies.
I do.
Dave, did you see any of this?
I did not.
Vanderbilt, did you see any of this?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't go now.
That's true. I did see Batman versus Superman.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
I don't even want to see that.
It was, you know, I think, Nick, you described it well, or maybe it was Dean. It was really slow moving, I thought, the first hour. Then once the fight scene started going, it was good, but just...
No, I didn't say anything good about that movie.
Okay, but that must have been... Yeah, it was okay. I wasn't blown away by it.
It's just another movie with a bat-ass-crazy ending.
Yeah. And again, the Superman character, Henry, who is it?
Cavill.
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 Yeah,
whatever.
I can't see him as Superman.
So there's your list of 10 movies to avoid because everyone else didn't. Why should you be different?
I'd suggest, for all the people that don't remember Meet Dave, if you want to laugh, look it up on IMDb because it caused me to laugh out loud.
You know what would be cool? This is how my brain works. If I could get like 10 copies of Meet Dave on DVD and I could send them out as gifts to people.
You use the word gift so loosely.
All right. With no explanation. Happy birthday.
I don't think you'd have a problem getting DVDs of that. I think there's probably a surplus somewhere in a warehouse.
There probably is. You just have to find them.
Like in the $5 bin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if you call Eddie Murphy, he'll send you 100 of them.
Man, can you imagine the excess product he's got sitting in his trunk? Whoa.
I was thinking about his movies, some of his terrible movies. Remember Pluto Nash?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sounds like Meet Dave would make you long for Pluto Nash.
Yeah, just I'm telling you, the poster image of little Eddie Murphy climbing out of big Eddie Murphy's ear, right there, that should be enough on whether, I'm not going to see that. No.
Jay Moore's got a great joke about Pluto Nash. He goes, you ever walk out of a movie? I walked out of a movie 15 minutes into it, and I was in it. It was Pluto Nash. All right, dude, I'll talk to you later.
What's that line? I'm sorry, real quick. What was that line I can't remember what comedian said, but it's like, this movie was so bad, I should have been in it. I can't remember what comedian said that.
Yeah, it wasn't me, but there's a few of those as well. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, buddy.
That's Nick DiGiulio.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the car.
Kid of the Week is sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. Tell me about Kid of the Year, will you?
Kid of the Year. Oh, I am so happy you and I don't have to pick Kid of the Year. Dave and Mary pick Kid of the Year. Kid of the Week, though, do you know a child that goes above and beyond for his family or her family or community? Nominate that kid for Kid of the Week. All you have to do is go to WGNradio.com/contest to submit an entry for a child between 5 and 18 years old that you think should be Kid of the Week. The winner will be announced right here on the Steve Cochran Show on WGN. But that's not all, Steve. In December, we will be choosing, Dave and Mary, will be choosing a Kid of the Year from all of the 2016 Kid of the Week winners. It's a heavy burden to bear, but you did a very nice job.
Gladly we'll do it.
We'll take it on.
Very nice job. The 2016 Kid of the Year will be awarded a $5,000 prize, courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch. See all the inventory at rayandraymonddeals.com. Again, go online to wgnradio.com/contest to submit your entry.
Going to meet the Kid of the Week in a second and also Grandma who nominated her. But before we do that, let me just tell you a little bit about this youngster. She's 10 years old, and she wanted an iPod, play music and stuff, right?
Sure.
Her great uncle said, I've got a phone you could have. It does pretty much the same stuff. And at that point, she had saved, at 10 years old, she had saved $70.
That's a lot.
$70 at 10 years old, that's all the money in the world.
That's a lot to me.
That's a ton of money.
That's a lot to most of us.
That's big dough. Mm-hmm. And she took the $70 instead because she had the old phone now that could do the iPod stuff. And she instead bought school supplies for kids in need.
How about that?
Isn't that nice? And then her 10th birthday, she asked her family to give her money. There's more to the story.
Yeah, not for her.
No, instead because she wanted to do something special for a charitable cause, and she did it for an organization called Almost Home Kids. That's a group I know a lot about. I used to do a lot of appearances for them. And Debbie Grisco and her family, a big, 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 big function behind it. Look, I've told you this a million times. Deb Grisco is an RN. She's been on the show a million times. She's run Almost Home Kids for years. She's just one of those people you don't say no to. And Almost Home Kids is this transitional home for kids with severe medical needs. So a kid gets out of Children's or any hospital and needs to go home with special medical equipment and different things. They go to Almost Home Kids first, and the parents have an opportunity to transition into what their new life will look like with this special medical equipment and various things. It's a very important deal, and it's an area of medicine that most people don't think about.
Right, especially for kids.
Yeah, so this little squirt, our Kid of the Week this week, also helped support Almost Home Kids. So let's pick it up with Grandma here first, and she can tell us more. Good morning, Grandma.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Nice to talk to you. Your Grandma Nancy?
Correct.
Sounds like Grace is a pretty cool kid.
We think she's very special.
Yeah, and I just covered the beginnings of it there, but it sounds like she's busy all the time doing nice things for other people.
Yes, she is. She's very helpful, and she earned some of that $70 by doing some household chores for us. That's how she kind of got some of it that initially, and then her birthday is in February. So I think she's very special because of these two things that she's done since the first of the year, and special because she's what she does in our family and her loving and generous and very kind to all of us.
I understand she's pretty helpful with Grandpa as well.
Yes, she is. That's my husband.
Yeah.
And she will help him walk out from her basketball games when he has trouble walking, and she'll stay right by his side. So she's a lovely little girl.
Sounds like it. How are you doing?
It's very good, thank you.
Yeah, well, it's a lot to take care of somebody dealing with Alzheimer's. How are you doing?
Fine. It's challenging at times, but our whole family is very helpful, too. Her dad, my daughter, they're all right there. So.
All right. Well, I know. Listen, this isn't about you. It's about her. But I'm gonna make it about you for a second. There's a lot of people in your life, I'm sure, your kids and everybody else, who are saying the same thing I'm saying to you. But I don't have to, have you be mad at me. I can just say it to you right now. You got to take care of you too. So, Grandma Nancy, I want you to take care of you. Little Grace wants you to take care of you and take all the help you can get because you're going through a tough stretch here.
You sound like everybody.
I knew I did.
From everyone, and I try to remember that. But
all right.
But I appreciate that. But
you're already a rock star, Grandma, so give yourself a break and do something for you.
This is Grace's story, so let's get on with her.
How great is that? She's producing the show. All right, hold on, Grandma. I'm done with you. Let's get over here to Grace. Grace, I tried to work with Grandma. I tried to. I did the best I could. I hope you heard that.
Yeah.
How are you, Grace?
Good.
You sound like a great kid. Are you really a great kid?
Yeah.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have two younger sisters, Abby and Hannah.
How old are Abby and Hannah?
Abby is 6 and Hannah's 2.
And which one's your favorite?
I like Hannah because she's really cute.
Okay, but Abby's good to have around too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you teach them? What can they learn from you at the ripe old age of 10?
I teach them that gifts are not for you. Gifts are for giving. They're not for receiving.
This is why we do Kid of the Week every week, just to point out how disappointing our own children are. what's your favorite thing about school, Grace?
I really like just getting to be there and seeing everyone with a smile on their face.
Okay.
All right. So far, she's perfect on every level. Right. Grace, we got to find a chink in your armor. What's one thing about you that would make me go, Grace? Can't think of anything, can you?
Not at the moment.
You are the kid of the week, and give your grandma a big hug and take care of everybody in the family like you know I know you do. You know what your job is, Grace? I told my kids this all the time when they're growing up, and I'll tell Abigail this as well. You know what your job is, Grace? Your job is this. Your job is to work hard in school and have fun. Can you commit to that, Grace?
Yeah.
Work hard in school and have fun, Grace. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Have a great day at school. Hold on, kid. How about that?
How about, okay, Grace, did you read everything that she's also involved in, too?
Well, I was a little busy, a cheerleading grandma and then having Grace disappoint me in my own children.
Here's just some of what she does in her spare time. Soccer, basketball, softball, swim team, gymnastics, plays the bass, participates in Girl Scouts, Indian princesses, and Spanish lessons.
Yeah. Well, come on, Grace, get off your butt. Do a little more. How
she's
about that?
Awesome, Dave.
And by the way, we're just kidding about being disappointed in our own kids. I'm only disappointed in Ross.
And Dave, you're only disappointed in...
I'm not disappointed in my kids, although that's a pretty tough act to follow.
Isn't
right
it?
There.
Right?
Yeah.
Crazy. Let's see. Let's take care of our new friend Grace here. How about tickets to see the King and I? That'd be cool,
yeah.
Right? King and I at the Lyric? Maybe take Grandma.
Yeah, maybe take one of us.
Grace, let Grandma drive this time. We have an app gift card as well, so you can go get yourself a new pair of headphones or whatever. A MyPillow, because when you're as busy as Grace at 10, you got to get a good night's sleep.
Got to sleep.
You got a lot going on.
She doesn't sleep. Are you kidding?
Not with that schedule. And a Lou Malnati's gift card at 1-800-LUDIGO or ludigo.com. Mary, do you have a favorite child today? I know it changes day to day.
Not yet. Haven't heard from any yet.
Are they all equally disappointing compared to Grace?
On any given day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, good. Just wanted to double check. 6:57 now. Mayor Emanuel on the show yesterday. We'll play back a clip of that from yesterday's program. I don't know if this includes kale, but let's listen.
I'm always ready to work with the governor. As I said in the past, if you want to work on workers' compensation reform, I did it in 2011. We passed it. I'm ready to help. I'm ready to help on areas where, I mean, I'm not going to work on right-to-work legislation because I don't agree with that. And I never have, and worker comp reform, I agree. I want to see a funding for Chicago public schools and poor children across the state where we stop penalizing poor kids because they're poor. We have school districts, wealthy school districts, with reserves and surpluses because of the way the state 20 years ago used to fund education. We now, poor kids in Chicago, let me just tell you something. Chicago leads the state now in high school graduation and growth. Chicago leads the state now in growth in math and reading scores,
right,
where the state actually is declining. These are poor kids doing exceptional things on education, yet our state penalizes them twice for being poor. They don't fund their teachers' pensions, where they fund every other teacher's pension, and because they're poor, they're actually held back by the state funding problem. It's not the governor's fault. He inherited it like I inherited problems. I'm trying to fix it. I will work with him in a shared mission to reform and fund education where we help poor kids who are actually doing exceptionally well in education.
That to me is why I believe I can put these two back together. The governor and the mayor were friends, and they weren't friends. Reunited, and it feels so good. He can be Peaches. The governor can be Herb, or vice versa. The governor could be Peaches.
I think this can
actually
happen.
Be Herb.
This could happen. This could happen.
He said, I will work with the governor in a team effort to fix this.
Team effort.
Yeah.
Being key. Yeah.
You know, and if Rahm, look, how do you stop Madigan? If Rahm and Rauner get together, then, you know, that's a pretty good 2-on-1 strategy.
One-on-one.
No, 2-on-1 versus Madigan. And
oh, Madigan's, I get it. Okay, I thought you were involved in this somehow.
No.
You're just a mediator.
No, I just put the people together. I'm not doing the heavy lifting.
You're just the middleman.
I am just the idea guy. I'm not getting in a room with those people.
Careful. Careful, mediator.
Because here's what I do. If I got in a room and then I go, here's what you do. Just do it. I'm going to play golf.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
All right, 7:13. Politics, it's a little bit of a slower week, which I guess most people should be relieved by. Other than Donald Trump's children not registering for the New York primary and therefore not being able to vote for their dad. it's so funny. Other than that, there's not a lot breaking the news. But there's something that popped up over the weekend, which was entertaining to me. Because I know a lot of you have wondered, who will the guys from Duck Dynasty get behind politically?
Oh, yeah.
Who will they support?
Pins and needles.
One of the Duck Dynasty guys, is this the dad, Phil Robertson.
Mm-hmm.
Did the prayer before. Was this the NASCAR race on the weekend? This is the invocation, right? Before the gentleman starts your engines. Here's a little bit of Phil from Duck Dynasty.
We got here via Bibles and guns. I'm fixed to pray to the one who made that possible. Father, thank you for founding our nation. I pray, Father, that we don't forget who brought us, you. Our faith in the blood of Jesus and his resurrection. Help us, Father, to get back to that. Help us, dear God, understand that the men and women on my right of the U.S. military, on my right and on my left, our faith in you and the U.S. military is the reason we're still here. I pray, Father, we put a Jesus man in the White House. Help us do that, and help us all to repent, to do what's right, to love you more, and to love each other. In the name of Jesus, I pray. Amen.
Pretty good, right? Nothing wrong with it.
No,
I mean, there's
it's
a couple,
fine. Sure.
You know, the guns thing in the beginning. You know, it's just, but overall, it's pretty even keeled. Now he's supporting Trump, but that you might think, well, that's, you know, do they have this all the time? And I'm a racing fan, so I thought it'd be a perfect time to bring up, since that made a bit of news this weekend, to bring up the greatest invocation ever done by someone you've never heard of, Pastor Joan Elms.
Oh.
This is at a race in Tennessee. I think it goes back to 2011. This is how you start an auto race. Roll it.
Heavenly Father, we thank you tonight for all your blessings. You said in all things give thanks. So we want to thank you tonight for these mighty machines that you brought before us. Thank you for the Dodges and the Toyotas. Thank you for the Fords. And most of all, we thank you for Roush and Yates partnering to give us the power that we see before us tonight. Thank you for GM Performance Technology and the R07 engines. Thank you for Sunoco Racing Fuel and Goodyear Tires that bring performance and power to the track. Lord, I want to thank you for my smoking hot wife tonight, Lisa. My two children, Eli and Emma, or as we like to call them, the little E's. Lord, I pray and bless the drivers and use them tonight. May they put on a performance worthy of this great track. In Jesus' name, boogity, 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 amen.
Boogity, boogity, boogity.
Man. The crowd's all riled up.
The first church in NASCAR.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Today, our federal state working group, which I co-chair, is announcing a new $5 billion settlement with Goldman Sachs to resolve claims over the bank's deceptive practices leading up to the housing crash. Of that, New York and New York families and communities will receive $670 million in cash and consumer relief. This settlement will help thousands of families with principal forgiveness to obtain write-downs of their mortgage debt so they can avoid foreclosure and stay in their homes, and is really another major step in the fight for justice.
Well, we are 8 years down the road, and a lot of people have already lost their homes. And if you are in that camp where you say, how the hell does nobody on Wall Street go to jail for this? The money is a big deal, but is it a big deal enough, and is anything else going to happen? Goldman Sachs, $5 billion in penalty payments. That announced yesterday. Aaron Katursky from ABC News joins us now. How big a story is this in New York? Are people just numb to it?
Well, look, in many ways, they're numb only because the other banks have already gone through this settlement process, and the numbers were much bigger. Bank of America, I think, was $16 billion. J.P. Morgan was $12 billion. So you hear about Goldman Sachs, $5 billion. You know, seems like a drop in the bucket. But you look a little bit deeper, and I think what still is irksome to some is that it's not going to be $5 billion. You look at some of the tax credits and the way the deal is structured, and it could be almost $1 billion less. Plus, as you mentioned, the fact that no one goes to jail and that there's still this impression that the bank executives are untouchable does, you know, sit kind of the wrong way with a lot of folks. Of course, here in the financial capital of the world, I don't think anybody's terribly sad. No one's going off to jail.
Sure. And one of the things that came out of that and outgrowth of it was Sarbanes-Oxley, which says if you're a CEO of a company, you sign off on responsibility for financial misgivings or people cheating the system that work for you. Prior to that, were there laws on the books from people you've spoken to that could take any of these folks down if they didn't have great lawyers?
Well, I mean, there's I think if prosecutors had the law on their side, they would have used it. And the U.S. attorney here in Manhattan's been fairly clear about that. There just wasn't a clear-cut prosecution to make against individuals necessarily, absent some kind of smoking gun. They had a lot of incriminating emails where guys would talk about, in the Goldman case, for example, you know, hey, are we sure about all this? You're like, nah, we're not really sure, but it's okay.
And, right, do it anyway.
So, but is that criminal? Or is that just naivete or silly or stupid or whatever? And it was that line that, you know, prosecutors couldn't seem to say with certainty, yes, this is criminal behavior and we can convince a jury.
So where does it go from here? Because, you know, the release seemed to indicate that this would help people save their homes. We're 8 years down the road. How many people are still trying to save their homes?
Well, and it's a good question, but I think more importantly in this settlement, and this is where the Goldman settlement differs from some of the others, is that they were able to get Goldman Sachs to pay for things like affordable housing, in addition to some kind of a, you know, mortgage restructuring, which could benefit some people, but I think getting a big bank to start financing affordable housing in some places is a useful thing, and that's part of the reason why they're getting some tax credits for every dollar they spend on affordable housing and why the settlement ultimately may be a little bit less. This is the last major settlement of its kind. The other big ones have settled. There may be some little guys still to go, but this is about as good as it's going to get, it seems.
And the major legislation that came out of it, is Sarbanes-Oxley the biggest piece to prevent this from going forward from folks you've spoken to about it?
Well, ask Bernie Sanders, and he may have a difference of opinion. Of course, he struggled in his interview with the New York Daily News editorial board about how he would stop the, you know, break up the banks and stop them from being too big to fail. And, you know, there are real questions about the limits of what a president or a government can do here. And the banks resisted some of the most significant changes that could have been made. And yet they're, you know, there's a feeling that there are things in place to limit the damage, although it's certainly not foolproof.
And the interconnectivity of the world economy now is such that I just wonder how much of the cat's out of the bag on this. I mean,
yeah, probably. But you know, look at the Goldman settlement, and it wasn't as if this was like interconnected, super collective, complicated stuff. This was, there's a bunch of loans we kind of know they are not good, and we are going to price them as if they are good and pitch them as if they're good and have gone through quality control. And it turns out, not so much.
Last question for me, unless, Andre, you want to jump in here.
Aaron, just real quick, I know Illinois, our Attorney General was able to secure about $40 million as part of that settlement. Was that the highest or one of the highest?
State totals we're talking about?
Yeah.
State, I think between, I mean, it was Illinois, New York, and California that were the biggest pots, and so this all, the three states, I think, get the largest share. This one also included, there was an Iowa component, there were some other components, but, you know, it makes sense. Big states had the most to lose.
Sure.
Last question, from me, and it's more curiosity than anything else, but if you remember everything leading up to this, beyond it, all the investigations, even the movie The Big Short, lots of discussions about how you value these homes. How you valued these mortgages, these big buckets of mortgages. We didn't know what to do with them because we didn't know how to put any sort of valuation on them. So how did they value the penalty? How did they come up with $5
billion? That's a good question. They seem to come up with a formula for a straight-out penalty, and that's, I think, about $2.3 billion. And then there's another $2 billion and change that's for all of these other programs, and that's how they got there. I think it's also in line with the conduct. You know, obviously Bank of America and then its acquisition of Countrywide did more of this kind of bad conduct than, say, Goldman Sachs did. It was just a bigger player, and that's why their number was bigger. I think it was in line with how much of these products they sold and how egregious the conduct was.
This would put, you know, most companies out of business 100 times over. How big a dent is this to Goldman Sachs?
Probably not very much, and they had priced this in earlier financial disclosures. So, you know, I don't think the bank is hurting because of this, and I think everybody knew it was coming. You know, look, $5 billion, no small amount of money, but I think Goldman Sachs can weather it.
Eric Kaczerski, ABC News. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Steve.
It's a 7:29. It's frustrating to hear because I'm not in the same. Look, I don't think rich folks ought to be penalized because they're rich. I don't think successful people are evil because they're successful. But if you have a lot of money and you're a bad person, well, that makes it worse, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Because you have access to things that other people don't have, including good lawyers to get you out of trouble when you misbehave. And on the level of 2008, I completely understand the frustration of how nobody's in jail for the rest of their lives for this. But you can't write laws that didn't exist after the crime was committed, and that seems to be the issue. Because if you think about it, in the case of a New York prosecutor, who would be a bigger rock star than somebody that could put Wall Street bankers who stole money the way they did in 2008 in jail? If they could have done it, they wouldn't have, or they would have done it. And they couldn't, which is why they're not in jail. And that's the part that Bernie Sanders isn't telling people. So, the fact that $5 billion is taken from Goldman Sachs is probably going to mean less shrimp at the company picnic this summer. But at least it's something.
Panarin over the brown line. The Kane right circle shoots. He scores! trick for Patrick Kane, and that's his 100th point this season. Patrick Kane scores his second hat trick of the season, and is the first Blackhawk to hit the 100-point mark since Jeremy Roenick did back in 1993-94. And the United Center ice surface is literally showered with hats.
Come on, give me one, Dad. Give me a little. Give me a vitamin. Ha ha.
Ha ha.
I can see you work a ha ha in the Northwestern football and basketball.
I'm going to.
Winner. I love Neil Greenberg. Nobody knows more about hockey analytics than Neil Greenberg. He practically invented the science. Writes the fancy stats column and blog for the Washington Post, and he's great on all sports. But I don't know, Neil. I believe hockey's your first love. Is that true?
It is one of my first, probably that in baseball. But yeah, I mean, I remember my first hockey game was probably when I was 9 years old at at Madison Square Garden. So I got hooked pretty quick.
Analytics in hockey, analytics in basketball, analytics in baseball. I suppose baseball probably got the most ink, you know, with Moneyball and where it all got started. But it's all about using math and using what we know of math today, and even new media, to determine where a player is going to perform best and under what circumstances, right?
Yeah, that's correct. It's to maximize the assets that you have. When you look at any sports team, they're spending a lot of money on a player, and you want to get as much information on that player as possible, and you also want to look forward as much as possible. It does you no good to pay for a past performance. You really need to have a good idea, at least an educated guess, as to what a player will do in the future. And it's not an exact science, but if it keeps you from making one terrible mistake per year and not hand out a multi-million-dollar contract to someone that doesn't deserve it, you're going to be ahead of the game.
Does the math ever lie? I have a high Blackhawk blood pressure.
Yeah. What if the end result's another Stanley Cup?
Well, it's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, if I'm in a hospital at the end of the series.
They have TVs in there.
I go to Doc Most Hospital. It's fancy.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Ah, right, let's say.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Or kiss me good.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never get tired of that song.
Me either.
I mean, we've been playing that for two and a half years.
Yep.
I still like it.
It's a toe tapper.
I still have that one particular line about loving you more than white guys should. I don't know why there's a white guy problem, but, you know, whatever.
Can we all just get along?
We have Breaking Dancing with the Stars news.
Uh-oh.
By the way, is there a more ridiculous phrase than breaking news? Everybody says breaking news now. Breaking news, Wolf Blitzer's wearing a tie. Breaking news. It's not breaking news anymore. Breaking news doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything anymore. So here's breaking news.
It's like when you see a sign on the window of a store, big sale.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's there every day.
Exactly. Yeah. Gina Lollobrigida, the former weathercaster from Channel
Ginger
5.
Ginger Z.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Lollobrigida.
Circa 1980.
Let me call my mother and find out who that is.
What, did something happen to her? Because I didn't watch the whole show last night, so are you going to tell me something?
Well, I just saw a clip that she was on Good Morning America today. Don't they put the losers on Good Morning America? The people kicked off the show?
No, that was Marla Maples.
Oh, she was kicked off?
Yeah.
Well, why is Ginger Z on?
I don't know.
All right, I almost started
Marla
a fire
should
there.
Not have been kicked off last night, because she wasn't bad.
Steve, this is why you should not be watching Good Morning America.
Well, it's on one of our nine monitors here. One of our nine-inch monitors
loaded
here in the studio.
With inaccuracies, clearly.
Or yeah. Dancing with the Stars, for that matter. Apparently.
I have a giant monitor next to me where I can see Dean's head and the other heads of the Channel 9 news team. But, no, okay, so my point is Ginger Z's fine.
She's great. We
That's
love
the point
Ginger.
I'm trying to make. She's still on the show.
Well, isn't that her job, what you're seeing her do?
Is it?
Yeah, she's a meteorologist.
I don't watch Good Morning America.
Oh, she is their chief meteorologist.
She's their meteorologist. She's working.
She's working.
Oh, I thought she was still at Channel 5.
No, she had a big promotion.
No, I knew that.
Way up.
I knew that.
She's also a friend of mine's stepdaughter.
No.
That I went to high school with.
Which friend?
Carl Kraft.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah. That's
the
her
Carl
stepfather.
Kraft?
Her stepfather. Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. Very exciting.
So, the new game, by the way, is 6 degrees of separation from Mary Vandeveld's cousin.
Cousin.
That should be mine and Dean's game.
Yeah.
Somebody actually said to me at the Cubs
game. No, you can't play that with Greeks. No. Because you're all related.
Well, Dean, someone said to me at the Cubs game last night, oh, you're Greek. I have Greek friends. I said, yeah, we're probably related.
Yeah, no kidding.
So she said, I have Greek friends? Is that like going, I have a black friend, so I'm not
exactly.
racist?
Exactly. She did. I didn't care.
I have a Greek friend, so I'm not hungry.
And I love olive oil.
And feta cheese.
You're going to be off the rest of the week. What are you doing, vacation?
It's a little family.
Oh, yeah, okay. There's something going on.
It's like a little family.
There's something going on. A little pause there.
A little work. It's complicated.
Is it one of these things where you're charging the company, even though it's not really it's personal?
Not as far as they know yet.
Yeah, good for you. Here's what we're going to talk about coming back. Barbershop 3 has the lawsuit. Screech is out of jail, so hide your daughters. Scott Eastwood, Clint Eastwood's son, joining. Is it son?
His son, yeah.
Joining the Fast and Furious. And of course,
and
we'll talk about Doug
Body
Banks.
Double for Steve Cochran.
Scott Eastwood, yeah. Yeah. Actually, at this point, Clint Eastwood is a body double for me.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh.
Sponsored by Wintrust Community Bank. The 8 o'clock hour continues. Dean is sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center.
You're so musical.
I really am. All right, let's go through the list here of a couple things that people need to know. Screech is out of jail.
Got out of jail.
What kind of country do we live in where Screech can safely walk the streets?
You know what? He's been a model prisoner, Steve, since he was convicted in that incident a couple of years ago where he was convicted of stabbing a guy during a bar fight. He's been.
Is that wrong?
Yes.
Because nobody told me I couldn't stab anyone.
Yeah, I think that's not good.
Okay.
Definitely discouraged in most situations. Mm-hmm. Released.
Oh, apparently we're out of time.
Hello. The fries are done, though. He served 3 months. And officials there say he earned his early release by cleaning jail floors and doing laundry.
Well, isn't that nice?
So very similar to what you do for WGN General Manager Jimmy DeCastro.
Yes, that's very true. Very true. And pick up his laundry. I don't mean his dry cleaning. I mean his actual laundry.
Actual socks.
Yep. Whatever he needs.
Yep.
The problem that I see Screech having when he gets out is, I don't know, that his name is Screech. Is he considered changing it?
Well, his real name is Dustin Diamond.
That's not much better, really.
That's his real name. But you look at him. I mean, even now, I mean, he was in a very nice suit yesterday, really cleaned up. I mean, we've seen mugshot pictures of him and, you know, terrible pictures of him. But, I mean, he was dressed to impress yesterday for the judge. But you look at him, and it's Screech.
This is the problem, kids. When you get into show business, if you get a name that gets stuck to you, it's tough to get rid of. I'll give you a local example. Mancow Muller. Mancow's real name is Eric. And I used to drive him crazy back in the old days when I would call him Eric because he wanted to be known as Mancow. Then suddenly he wanted to be known as Eric, but nobody called him Eric because
everybody called him Mancow.
Because everybody called him Mancow. If your name's Mancow, you're not going to get taken seriously for really any reason.
How do you come up with a nickname like that, Mancow?
I don't know, parenting?
I don't get that. How did he get that name?
It's a parentage issue.
Doesn't it sound like you're with some jive radio programmers, you know, 100, hey, man, we got to come up with some crazy thing for you.
Well, I think jive would be the word, right, wouldn't it, in this case?
Yeah, let's see, you're a man, but let's add cow to the name to make it extra hilarious.
Yes, I remember the 90s. Now, on the as we go through the list here, the Barbershop 3 movie, are all of the people being sued, or is it the producers?
It's the producers of the movie. Yes, there's a New York playwright who says that all this whole Barbershop franchise thing is stolen from him from a stage play that he had that toured the country from 1998 to 2001 called Scissors.
Okay, I have a question. Are you taking questions?
I am, yes. You in the back row.
Yeah, the first barbershop movie was like 10 years ago. He's just getting to this now?
Just getting around to it. He's been very busy with his production of Scissors.
If I was a judge, I'd go, where were you 10 years ago?
He says that the characters and the plot lines bear an uncanny resemblance to his work. I've seen many plays, not many, three or four. I guess that's a lot. You know, similar kind of plot lines. Bunch of guys hanging around the barber shop.
Yeah, yeah.
Bunch of women hanging out in the beauty shop. It's not exactly like you've come up with the most, you know, the kind of concept that no one else has thought of before.
Well, that's why, you know, I know you get these kind of emails too, but you'll do something on the air like, well, you know, a stupid news story. And they go, oh, you stole that from, really? Who, Steve Allen in the 40s? Because that's been done a couple of times.
This is not a unique concept, but this guy says that this is a ripoff of his work. He's not only seeking to block the release of Barbershop The Next Cut, which opens on Friday, but he's going to need $20 million for this, Steve.
I want Cedric the Entertainer to get Larry the Lawyer to sue that guy.
I saw this movie last night.
Any good?
It's kind of funny.
I like the first two.
Yeah, it's kind of it's funny, but this one takes a decidedly serious turn dealing with the issue of gun violence and murders in Chicago. You know, it's still set on the south side of Chicago. And this movie deals with gun violence and murder in Chicago the way Chirac should have. This one does what Chirac tried to do and failed. Not sure.
Father Flager in it?
There is a clip of Father Flager, not as an actor, but just like setting up the problem of violence in Chicago. There are a lot of news clips and, you know, things like that that are in the beginning of the movie, and one of them is Father Flager talking about the problem here. So, you know, there are all the you know, familiar characters, but also it takes a very serious turn.
Well, good.
As well. I won't be here on Friday to review it, but I'll tell you right now that I liked it. And also, because I'm not going to be here on Friday, run to get a ticket to the Jungle Book. A+. It's the most amazing, jaw-dropping film that I've seen in a long time.
Come on.
Unbelievable. Have you seen any of the commercials? Anything?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that's real in the movie is that little boy who's now 12 years old. His name is Neil Seti. Everything else, Steve, everything else computer-generated.
Well, I saw you talking to Favreau and the kid over this because it's Jon Favreau's movie, right?
He directed it, correct.
So the kid's pretty impressive.
The kid is, it's his first audition, first acting job, number one.
That?
But the realism, the drama, the humor, the nostalgia, because we all grew up with the, you know, the old Disney Jungle Book, the
sure.
animated version. It's all great. But when you stop, then you think about, this is all fake. A computer created all this. It's jaw-dropping. It's
wow.
Can't recommend it enough.
You know, the original Jungle Book was one of my favorites as a kid. But
mine, too.
But
loved
I was,
it.
But I was always, you know, scared of some of the animals and stuff.
Baloo.
Right? Is this going to scare little kiddos?
Well, that's my only reservation about this movie. I mean, you know, think about the tradition of Disney movies. There was always something pretty tragic that happened in this. You know, think Bambi. Think, you know, some of the classics. The original Disney movies did not shy away from.
They usually killed off the mother and the father was an idiot.
Often that was the case.
Yeah.
The difference here, though, is this looks so real. I mean, it's different. It's the violence level is about the same as like Lion King or, you know, something like that. But it looks so real. And little kids, sensitive, you know, may get a little bit scared. That's my only reservation about this.
I will say this. I heard Robert De Niro at one point describe acting as advanced pretend.
Yeah.
And that's why I think occasionally you'll get a kid who's never done it before who's really good at it. Because who's better at playing pretend than little kids, right?
This kid is just a complete natural and kind of, you know, he plays Mowgli. You know, he's the boy raised by wolves. They're sending him back to his man village, you know, and all kinds of things happen in the forest. But reminded me of you running around in that little diaper the whole time.
It's funny you mention that because that's a perfect segue into Scott Eastwood. Scott Eastwood joining the cast of Fast and Furious?
Yeah, he's, I guess you might say he's replacing Paul Walker as the hunk in the movie. They announced it yesterday. It'll be the first Fast and Furious movie without Paul Walker. Died in 2013. Eastwood was a close friend of Paul Walker's, and he says to be able to add to the franchise, to Paul's story, to the Fast and Furious family. Dream Come True comes out April 2017, or if they can get his body all waxed up before then, maybe they'll get it out earlier.
Last word is on Doug Banks. I talked about this a little bit earlier. I met Doug, one of the first big shot personalities in Chicago I ever met was Doug. Couldn't have been nicer. And every time I crossed paths with him in the last 20, 25 years, which wasn't nearly enough, he was always a guy you wished you'd see again sooner. Very genuine, great connection to the audience. Really a terrific talent, always was. But was one of those incredibly likable people. And I was, frankly, Dan, I didn't even know he was sick. So to hear that he died yesterday at 57 was pretty shocking.
Yeah, he had he'd been off the air for a couple of weeks. He'd been dealing with diabetes for a pretty long time, and pretty severe, not advanced or early stage in any way. He was on dialysis. He returned to the air. Everybody said that he didn't look great, that he appeared at the Chicago Black Women's Expo just this past Friday and told a lot of people how tired he was. So apparently the official cause of death has not been announced. Sources close to the family are saying that it was kidney failure, which caused it. We did get a statement from Doug Banks' wife in the last hour where she thanks Chicago for their outpouring of support and sympathy and condolences. No word on any memorials yet. Certainly there will be. There will be public memorials. There will be celebrations for Doug Banks. But I couldn't agree with you more. We've had him on the TV morning show a couple of times. Lights up the room when he walks in the room. Couldn't be nicer. Couldn't be friendlier. Has been on the air from back in the old WBMX days.
Yep.
GCI, V103. You last in Chicago that long, that says something. And he was he's going to be missed. He was a big deal in Chicago radio.
By the way, Robert Feeder in his Tribune blog this morning posts remembering Doug Banks, but also the ratings. Doug Banks number one in afternoon drive.
So there you go.
There you go. There's your legacy right there.
And has pretty consistently, whatever station that he was on.
No, he killed it.
Killed it every place that he went. First station in Chicago, he quadrupled the ratings. That doesn't happen anywhere, with the exception of this show.
Well, we may have, but think about how damaged it was when I got it back.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. That's not the point, Steve.
By the way, Steve Harvey credits Doug Banks with giving him a shot that led to his radio, which led to, all the other things he's doing now as well. Anyway, he'll be missed. A good guy. Very, very good guy.
Yep.
You can't find anybody to say negative things about Doug Banks. You can find people to say negative things about me or Dean. You can't find people to say negative things.
I'll say something negative about you if you'd like.
No, I mean, you can. Well, I knew that could happen.
Oh.
I'm saying you can't find anybody unfortunate or negative about Doug.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, Dean and I could be negative on each other all day, but that's another show. Listen, enjoy your time off, whatever it is, and it sounds like it's illegal.
Thank you.
Okay. Dean Stalen from the company. It's 8:31. The big story's next.
Well, life on the farm is kind of laid back. Ain't much an old country boy like me can't have. Thoroughly to ride, early in the sack. I thank God I'm a country boy. Well, a simple kind of life never did me no harm. Raising me a family and working on the farm. Days are all filled with an easy country charm. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Come on, people.
Well, I got me a fine wife, I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on the griddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy.
Weirdest use of this song. Weirdest use of this song in America.
Baltimore?
Baltimore Orioles use this as their seventh inning stretch song.
Why?
Hey, they're undefeated. I think I can figure is they're close to West Virginia. You go a little too far in Maryland, you'll end up in West Virginia. It's 8:42. If you grew up anywhere in the Midwest, you know the name Max Armstrong. Max, though he's only a boy of 27 now, has been on this radio station for many, 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 many years. Still a handsome devil as well. And he is one of our inductees in the Walk of Fame this year. We bring in Orion Samuelson, who knows him best and has things about Max that could put him in jail for the rest of his life.
You're absolutely right.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hope you are, too.
And let me get Dave in here as well, so you two can talk about this very exclusive club that you two are a part of and why Max is welcome.
Well, it's a wonderful honor. And I mean, I still can't get over being a part of the Walk of Fame.
Neither can we.
It's over. Okay, thank you, Steve, for spoiling
sorry, a nice moment. Sorry, I said I'd stay out of it. I'll be over here. And anything on Max before I put him on the rack?
Well, I finally made a good call on talent after blowing it on Bob Collins saying he'd last 6 months. But the first time I heard Max, he was working for the Illinois Farm Bureau doing radio interviews that he would send to stations around the state, and he'd send them to me. And first time I heard him, I said to Lottie, who was our secretary producer for 34 years, if we ever need a new member in the farm department, I'm going after this guy.
And you did. And
I did,
you did.
It was a challenge.
He wasn't quite ready for prime time until you insist. This is, by the way, if Warren wants to hire you, just know that he will hire you. He'll go full Sopranos on you. You will take the job.
Well, I went to his boss at Farm Bureau in Bloomington, and I said, I can't talk this guy into joining me in Chicago. I said, I need your help, because Bill, while he really enjoyed Max's talent at Farm Bureau, knew the opportunity at WGN would be a good one for his talent. And so the next step was he bought a bag of McDonald's and drove out to Max's home just outside Bloomington and talked him into it. So.
Yeah, and here's the thing. It's the ultimate choice you have to make if you get the opportunity. Are you going to be the big fish in the little pond, or are you going to go swim in the big pond and see how big a fish you can be?
That's right. I had to do it when I came from Green Bay, and yeah, you do.
I got thrown out of a lot of ponds myself before I got here. It was catch and release.
I make a little room and she climbs on up. Open up a throttle and stir a little dust. Look at her face. She ain't a fool of me.
Because she thinks my tractor's sexy.
She thinks my tractor's sexy.
Yeah, I thought that was it.
It really turns her on. She's always staring at me while I'm chugging along.
Dave Bennett and Orion Samuelson are in. I don't know if there's a secret handshake, but a guy who loves his tractor, Max Armstrong, in the class of 2016. Hello, buddy.
Hey, Rascal. That's plural. We're all three of you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir. I'm honored. It's a privilege to be on the radio with you, as a matter of fact. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, it's nice to talk to you. I know that Jimmy DeCastro runs this joint. Came out to see you the other day. Did you think you were in trouble before he told you why he was coming to see you?
I was worried, clearly worried. Anytime the manager comes in, you say, uh-oh, what now?
Now, Orion, you guys do the TV show every week, right?
That's right, yes.
And it's out in Aurora?
On FDTV across the country.
But it's out in Aurora, right? The studios are at Aurora?
Yeah, at Aurora.
So for DeCastro to get into, you know, one of his vehicles and drive all the way to Aurora to tell Max this, that's pretty great.
That had to be halfway to Iowa for him.
You know, pretty much is, as a matter of fact. Now, Max, do you have any questions about the actual induction, any sort of painful hazing or anything these two might
do? Well, that's what I was wondering. You know, if you bring out those paddles again, Steve, it's going to be a little disconcerting.
That's a whole nother induction ceremony.
Yeah, and I'm just the host. Dave, when you were brought into the fold here,
yes.
You know, because Orion was in year one, mm-hmm. you were year two, we're right. Now in year three. When you were brought in, did Orion give you any sort of advice?
He just said, keep my head down and walk straight ahead.
Speak softly. And...
Yes. No, you know what? Orion came to my defense.
Yeah, well, what defense? What are you talking about?
From the hazing.
There's no hazing. Orion, what does Max need to know about this special day?
Really, just that it's very special, and be humble, and because this really is a great award, great honor. So, And I think Dave handled it very well, and I'm sure that Max will handle it very well. One thing I would comment about Max is rascal is his favorite word, and he uses that when he can't remember the name of the person he's talking to.
Give it up a company secret.
Here it comes.
Now, Bill, you know better than that.
You know, we all have that, don't we? Because for me, it's guy, dude, buddy. It's usually buddy with me. If I call you buddy, it's likely I've forgotten who you are. Yes, Dave.
I just called you Ole.
May I ask Max one question?
Yes, go ahead.
Which is, I don't know if Spike's going to be here for the induction ceremony.
We're working on it.
Next month.
We're working on that.
But I think it would be only fitting, Max, would you agree if Spike walked to the podium and kissed you on the top of the head?
I think that would make the day unique.
You know, I'm not sure we need that, Dave. I don't think that's necessary.
But it was kind of a ritual, though.
If he's got to kiss me anywhere, I suppose the top of the head is the place.
But that is kind of how your day began every morning.
Well, not specifically how it began. You know, he did come to work first.
But no, I mean, before his first report in the morning.
And maybe his wife kissed him first, I would hope.
Yeah, right? This is kind of the painful hazing.
No, never that, Mary. No.
Well, we're excited for you. It is the end of next month. We'll all get together out here at Pioneer Court. Anything they need to know, boys, that Max needs to know about the care and cleaning and upkeep of your plaque once you're in the sidewalk to keep the pigeons off, things like that?
I go out there every morning, just a little dust broom and just kind of clean it up. And I'll be happy. I try to take care of Orion's as well, and I'll be happy to take care of Max's.
Very kind of you.
I figure the dog walkers in Streeterville can't wait to have one more time.
Hey, does Max get to pick who he's going to lie next to? Like, can he say, I want to
lay next to? Well, no, it's not a final rest.
Lie next to?
Well, or be embedded in the ground with.
Well, no, it's not embedded.
I mean, it's permanent, so he gets, can he say,
right,
I want to lay next to?
It's not like he's
Orion.
Dying. He's not dying. He's just being honored.
He should go next to Big O.
Yeah, we I believe we put a plot next to Big O where...
It's an empty plot.
And we can leave flowers and candles.
It's all agricultural.
You should see the fertilizer they're using on Pioneer Court now.
The body will lie in state.
Right? And repose.
Well, it's a great class to be involved with, and we're very proud of you, buddy. And it's well-deserved, and I'm glad you were chosen.
And I'm glad I talked to you into coming to WGN.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, me too. I'm thrilled at the prospect of seeing everybody next month. It's a great WGN family, and the listeners are an even greater family. So it's going to be a thrill for me from that standpoint.
All right, buddy. Looking forward to it.
Congratulations.
Oh, by the way, just so you know, the new mother's room is open at Midway Airport. Just heard the announcement. The mother's room is open.
All right.
Max is one of his many flights he's taken around the country that he does every week.
So all right. For all you mothers.
I'll keep that in mind because I know you're talking to me.
Yes, sir.
Stand by. That's Max, the rascal. I love Orion giving that up. Oh, you just gave up one of his big secrets.
I know.
You are in such trouble now. It's unbelievable.
I may have to stay away from the ceremony.
We'll see Orion on Skype that day because Max is mad about the rascal secret. All right, sir, we'll talk to you in a few minutes. Tracy Huvelman, speaking of GN Lifers, who was Spike's longtime producer, and then produced for me for about 6 weeks before she quit.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Did she go to Rose Show as well?
She did not. Okay. I don't think she went to Rose Show. Yeah.
But Tracy is a wonderful mom, a great person, and you know, she feels things at a level that the rest of us should feel things at. So when she calls and says, I got something that's troubling me, you listen.
Right. And very heartfelt.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And Tracy called a while ago because she had a neighbor who was just going through a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And it's the Van Houten family who we featured on this show. Noah Van Houten, 11 years old, died the other day after fighting Batten disease for 7 years. And we had talked about the Van Houtens on the air because Batten disease is just, I had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely hideous. It causes mental impairment, seizures, loss of sight, loss of motor skills, and is something that was almost always fatal. But when two kids in this family were diagnosed, Noah and his sister, the family got busy fighting, and they didn't know about the disease either. and it created a foundation which has raised a bunch of money for a disease that, or a cause, I should say, that doesn't get funded. And they've already had breakthroughs, scientific breakthroughs that could lead to saving children down the road. So God bless them. But I can't imagine the pain that the family's gone through and the fight they continue to fight. And I just have such respect and love and support for them. Little Lane and Noah were both diagnosed, I think, around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Laney.
Yeah, Laney, I should say.
Yeah, Little Laney.
And, you know, at the time of the diagnosis, 100% fatal disease. But the charity started by Jennifer and Tracy Van Houten really has created some of these breakthroughs that I mentioned. And some of the work the Noah's Hope Foundation started funding this year, since the diagnosis, was picked up by a biotech company from California. And they took the work, they licensed it, and they made an infusible drug, which has now shown some breakthroughs. And BioMarin Pharmaceutical announced last month it's close to bringing a treatment for a particular form of Batten's disease to market. So,
and look at the awareness. Look at the awareness that they've raised. Now we're talking about it. Now people know about it and can continue the fight.
Yeah, without a doubt. And more people need to talk about it, and more people need to spread the word. Now, one thing you can do to help as part of the fundraising efforts, Noah's Hope is organizing an annual 5K run again this year that coincides with Noah and Laney's birthdays. And this year the charity's namesake obviously will be absent. But finding a cure and giving hope is really the main legacy that we're talking about, and a perfect legacy for little Noah. The Cupcake Classic 5K, formerly called the Run for Hope, is on May 22nd. And you're all encouraged, whether you run, you walk, whatever, to join them. The Downers Grove Fire Department also has a golf outing in August that you can be a part of. And Noah's Hope is partnering with Hope for Bridget for its fifth season fundraiser in November. That raised $500,000 last year for Batten Research. You can do this. You can help in this terrible disease that took this little boy's life. And keep your prayers going for the Van Houtens and for Laney. It's noahshope.com is the easiest reference point for all of this. And, of course, we thank Tracy for reminding us about the family. And even though it was terrible news, give us an opportunity to once again bring it up and ask you to look at noahshope.com and join in the run and the other things you can do to help.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
I published all the information in my tax returns, not just for the last year, but for the last 6 years. I've also given additional information about money inherited and given to me by my family, so people can see the sources of income that I have.
When you combine legal tax avoidance with illicit tax avoidance some of the activities that we're seeing. This is not just billions of dollars. It's not even just hundreds of billions of dollars. Estimates are this may be trillions of dollars worldwide.
The Panama Papers. Is this as big as we're making it out to be, or is it going to be one of those stories that fades away? We'll be talking about it in history classes hundreds of years from now, or will it be gone? I do know David Cameron is trying to change as many laws as he possibly can.
Yeah, speaking of being gone.
Right, to show that he really didn't mean what he did.
I like how he's saying now, we're going to put new laws in.
Yes.
So you can't do what I did.
We are going to stop people like me. Jim Rudenberg standing by. Jim can speak to this and writes about it with regularity. And Jim, I don't know, Jim, that's probably a good place to start. Is this as big a deal as we're making it out to be?
I think it is. I mean, it's especially, you know, here we are in the United States talking about it when it hasn't really touched our country in the same way. But, you know, how many world leaders now are answering for this data breach? It's whether it stands up to history, to your question, who knows? But it's a big deal. I think it's a big deal.
The New York Times has covered this probably better than anybody around the world, because when this story originally broke, it broke in a German newspaper, and there seemed to be some credibility issues initially before people really bought in. Was there a tipping point there before you realized that it was real?
Well, I think what the paper, and so I cover media, so I wasn't in the newsroom when this was breaking. I think the paper did get criticized initially for not throwing it right on the front page. I think we did have to digest it and say, okay, because we weren't part of this consortium. What is this a big deal? And then you saw it spun out, like how many front page stories in our newspaper and inside stories too. So It just took a, it was a lot to digest. It's a lot of countries at once with this problem.
Your beat in particular goes to the larger question here. Are leaks becoming a form of journalism as opposed to something we would just be offended by?
And I think the answer is yes. And I think, and not just like, not just any leaks, but gigantic data breaches. Like we can, because of technology, where people can unearth huge amounts of data. Now, the bank involved in the Panama Papers is saying this was a hack. Therefore, this is stolen data. Well, the entire world media is going to lunch on that. So, you know, it's a kind of interesting time because this is not data that we went and reported and rooted out ourselves. But, you know, then we did what we did and applied our skills to it. And there you have it, like scandals in, you know, 50 countries.
Talking to Jim Rindberg from the New York Times covers media and covers the coverage of how we cover things. How's that, Andrea?
Jim, I love that, Steve. Jim, how do Brits see this? I mean, when they're watching all of this unfold now in the media, are they seeing this as an honest oversight? Because Prime Minister initially refused to say whether he had a stake in Blair Maher Holdings, but then acknowledged he sold his shares before he was elected in 2010. So did they see it as an honest oversight or a hidden job here?
I think that the consensus that I'm picking up on is if he had addressed this head on, he's run on a transparency sort of, he's a transparency, pro-transparency politician. There was a hint of hypocrisy, and then he didn't want to talk about it, and this is a private matter. He was going back and forth in terms of how much he was going to disclose, and now he's disclosing everything. So I think it's like what they say about Watergate, too. Sometimes the cover-up's worse than the crime at times.
How does this compare to the recent leaks that we've seen, the WikiLeaks stuff and what's his name? The guy that escaped the Russia.
Julian Assange.
No, not Assange.
Snowden.
How does it compare to those leaks in pure size?
In size, it's like way bigger. It's like, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's like a like on the order of several times larger. It's the biggest in history. I mean, this is like 2-point-something terabytes, and it's a ton of data. Like,
so,
and we've only seen apparently 1% of what's in this case, cash. I only write that word, C-A-C-A-G.
But here's the thing that is difficult, is, and the reason this story will be extended, just by way of the pure workload of going through that amount of data to find the names that could still be uncovered. They don't just jump out, right? I mean, is there a keyword searchability to these to shortcut it?
They do have a way to search, but it's still like 11.5 million files. So it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of news organizations. You know, like I said, the New York Times and the Washington Post, and I believe the Wall Street Journal were not part of this. So I can say that the New York Times and the Washington Post are both talking about getting access to this data. So I do think you're going to have more reporters picking through it and get 11.5 million documents from a bank that's at the center of a lot of international finance.
You know, if you are involved with this Panamanian firm, you know that you're somewhere in these 11.5 million files. Wouldn't you be working on fronting the story before it comes out about you? In other words, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we didn't get a statement or two from world leaders coming up to going, you're going to hear about this, so you know here's what really happened.
Well, that's interesting because in a lot of these cases, world leaders, I'm told by the consortium that's running this whole story, they're called the ICIJ, they're out of Washington, they did give a lot of people several weeks advance notice. So it's funny that people didn't do that more people didn't do that. Maybe they concluded, well, you know, how can I get ahead of that? I'm publicizing my own misdeeds or alleged misdeeds. And in some of these cases, by the way, it's not misdeeds. It's just an appearance of hypocrisy in the face of, you know, promises to end tax havens for other people.
Jim, that's my other question to you, too. Are you seeing a lot of people, maybe now names starting to surface, kind of walking this line between illegal versus unethical? Because Cameron initially said his father set up the fund so he could trade it in dollar securities, and he said, well, that's entirely standard. It's not to avoid taxes.
Yeah, I think that the thing about the Panama Papers that is most notable is that this is legal. A lot of this is legal. I mean, so was the NSA wiretapping program in the beginning, that are parts of it that Ed Snowden revealed. You know, so it's then when the public gets its hands on it, it says, well, should this be legal? And that's the question. But this also feeds, and we see it in our own country, this larger global sense. And I think Trump is tapping into this, and certainly Bernie Sanders is tapping into this, that the game is rigged, that people with the money for the accountants and, you know, the staff to help them sort through the loopholes get to hide their money. And those of us that we moped who filed W-2s, we can't figure that out. We don't have, can't pay people enough money to figure it out.
That's another discussion, but that's the interesting part about Trump being a part of that, because who could pay for more coverage than Trump, even if he's worth $1 billion as opposed to 10? Now, Bernie Sanders, in his one-suit world, I believe in, because as I said to Bernie last time he was on, I believe you believe everything you say. It wouldn't surprise me if some Trump affiliate was in the Panama Papers. It would shock me if Bernie Sanders was somehow tied to this.
There's a great irony in that, in the Trump movement, because really what he says is, yes, I play the game, but that's why I'm the best person to dismantle the game. I understand how it works.
Right.
You know, it's an interesting argument.
Right. How is that okay? You know, who is the catch me if you can guy? You know, now he's out chasing the bad guys when he used to be a bad guy. Trump doesn't have that kind of charm.
Frank Abagnale?
Yeah, that's the guy. All right, so put on your Swami hat for a moment, and we'll let you go on this. Where does this go in regards to the journalism you cover on a day-to-day basis? In other words, are there people out there now who are thinking about getting into the business by way of getting into the leaks business?
Yeah, I mean, there are whole organizations based around uprooting big data. You know, The Intercept was founded and has him on its staff, and I think he's in the leadership position, is Glenn Greenwald, who was very important in the Snowden stories. You also are going to have people motivated to go hack giant databases. And I think when it's government databases, there will be an argument about national security. When it's a private corporate database, we and the rest of the media and the mainstream old-fashioned media will have to decide, what are we comfortable using? If it's stolen data, like the Sony hack, which was about, you know, in part there were some important issues, but some of it was what executives thought of Angelina Jolie. Is that our business to publish that, and is it serving a greater good? And I think that ultimately the legal system might come into play here and decide, you know, help define what's usable from a stolen giant batch of data, because we're going to see way more of these. That I can guarantee you.
And this is the big ethical question, because you've got newspaper companies. It's not going to happen to the Times or to the Washington Post or even the Chicago Tribune anytime soon. But there are tons of newspapers around the country that are trying to retool to figure out how they do it. How far down the road are we from legitimate newspaper companies merging with new media companies and then blurring that line and going, well, we're going to hire hackers. Mm-hmm. We're going to hire hackers to find these stories.
I think the Chicago Tribune, the LA Times, the New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal will never do that. But we are increasingly going to have sources who are doing that. And there's a whole secondary part of this where, you know, I was talking to people in Iceland, of all places. They've been part of this transparency movement, and they want to make their country a haven for people who, in the name of right, you know, white hat hackers, they want them to be comfortable in Iceland and protected so they can go and hack into systems to unearth alleged misdeeds. It gets murky for old-fashioned journalists.
And it also gets murky because who gets to decide what's right? Right to me?
Exactly.
Right to me, the hacker, may not be what's right to you, the reader, or right to you, the company, and how much privacy are we entitled to? Anyway, I'm a fan of your work, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
It's Jim Rutenberg from the New York Times covers media. Sandberg to the studio. Sandberg, oh, are we on the air? Yeah. I have a question for Mary Sandberg, producer of the program. It's 9:27. Patrick Kane's coming up. Tomorrow, my friend Peter Greenberg will be here, the travel guru, and he's bringing in the president of Ecuador.
Correct.
Secret Service has been through here like 75 times in the last 2 days.
They have.
So, a couple of questions. The president of Ecuador, fluent in English?
Yes.
Okay, so that won't be an issue.
Yeah, he actually went to college here.
You should have said no.
Oh.
You have to learn Spanish by tomorrow.
Yeah, just so we
hola.
Can practice in.
Hola, el presidente.
I think actually Mike Jacobson knows some Spanish, so he
can. Oh,
that
was Spanish. I do too.
That was Spanish. Okay. Hola, el presidente. But that's it. I'm out.
Then you're done.
So he'll be here at what time tomorrow?
8:20.
And the reason
just to confirm, 8:20.
The reason we're talking to him tomorrow is because Peter Greenberg's doing this new series where he gets a world leader to give up his calendar for, like, I don't know, a week, and then they go around and just follow him, shoot him, and ask questions about his country.
Film him.
Yeah, so we'll be on this.
You want to say shoot a world leader.
That's actually a fair point, especially if talking about Secret Service.
And you're going to want to look pretty tomorrow because they're bringing a lot of camera people. They're shooting them coming here.
So. No sweats, then?
Yeah. No sweats. I saw her sweats. Yeah. Under Armour.
Yeah.
Not she's not saying you, of course.
Should we wear the colors of Ecuador?
I have to go to the gym afterwards.
I don't
afterwards.
Know what they are.
Not tomorrow, today.
To the gym.
The colors of Ecuador? I don't know what the colors of Ecuador are.
We could all dress like Ecuadorians.
What would that look like?
I don't know.
I certainly hope
they're very handsome people.
That's what I heard. They're very good looking.
The colors of Ecuador are yellow, blue, and red.
Oh, yellow's a great color.
Yellow, blue, and red.
Brings out the red in my eyes.
That doesn't go together. Okay. We'll figure it out.
I hope the protocol minister is listening to this conversation because obviously I'm fluent in Ecuadorian processes. So that's tomorrow at 8:20, you say?
8:20.
What's his name? Who's the president of Ecuador?
You guys don't know?
Ecuadori?
Presidente Ecuadori.
You know who it is, you guys.
I do, but I don't remember.
All right, I'll just tell you. It's Rafael Correa.
Of course, Rafael Correa.
Rafael.
Who, by the way, I believe was just reelected last fall. And the Constitution is either changing or had to change because there were term limits. I think that's right. I'm not entirely positive.
We'll have to read up a little
bit. I did a little bit of research, not a lot yet. I'll be studying Ecuadorian politics tonight prior to his appearance tomorrow. That's with Peter Greenberg, the travel guru.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
The Steve Cochran Show presents Breakfast with a Blackhawk, sponsored by MB Financial Bank. MB means business.
Come on, Dave, sing along. Are you ready? Patrick Kane standing by. MB Financial Bank, MB means business. I'll have a listener question in a second. Send your question to Steve Cochran Show. Is that the email? Steve Cochran Show at WGN Radio.
Yes.
Is that the email?
Yeah.
You don't sound too confident.
I've never opened an email on that account. Not a single one. I don't even know the password. But send it to Steve Cochran Show, WGNRadio.com, and
Maybe we'll answer it.
We'll get the questions, and we have one to ask.
If
Patrick
it's the
Kane
right address.
Patrick Kane joins us now. Congratulations, man, on a phenomenal season.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me.
How are you, man?
I'm pretty good. How's everything going?
We're doing fine, doing fine. Was your dad there for the last game?
In Chicago?
Yeah. Because I know he made a bunch of games this year.
He probably makes about, I would say, 20 to 25 of the 40 games, so it comes to a lot.
It's a pretty serious family commitment.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He doesn't like to fly either, so he drives in from Buffalo. It's about eight and a half hour drive, and, you know, sometimes he's coming in the day of the game and leaving the next day, so it's what him and my mom, love to do. I know my dad has a big passion for it, and he says, you know, when he's at the United Center and just watching games, he's in his glory. So it's fun to have him around.
Yeah, pretty cool to have that kind of family support. Now, I grew up in upstate New York. I've never made it from upstate New York to Chicago in 8.5 hours. How fast is your father driving?
Well, I don't know if Buffalo is considered upstate New York. It's more of Western New York.
Yeah, okay.
So.
Okay.
He actually could probably make it a little quicker if he drove faster, but he takes his time and, they make a few stops along the way and kind of make a little trip out of it every time. But when you're doing it 20, 25 times a year, it's kind of, you think it would get old, but they love doing it and they love, coming to watch the Blackhawks.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool after a game at this point in your career when you can look up and mom and dad are watching. That's pretty great. Listen, I know you might get bored with your own success, but you don't mind if we wallow in it for a second. Kaner's 46 goals, most by a Hawk since Jeremy Roenick scored the same number in 93-94. Last Hawks player to lead the league in points was Makita back in 67-68. Last one to reach 100-point plateau was JR. That was in 93-94. And there's over been seven individual seasons in Hawks history that have more than 106 points. You know, we all remember the streak, but did you feel like you were in a special sort of zone for most of the year?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of like every season, you know, you try to stay as consistent as possible, and you're going to have your ups and downs along the way. But, you know, I think there was probably more stretches this year. You know, you mentioned the 26-game point streak that I was more consistent. And, you know, when you're having that consistency, I guess, you're like you said, you're kind of in the zone and you're very focused and feel confident on the ice, too. And I think that's, you know, half the battle is confidence when you have the puck and you're seeing plays and you can make things happen out there. So, yeah, it was a fun year. I give a lot of credit to, you know, my two Russian line mates with Anisimov and Panarin. And, you know, the power play was pretty efficient this year, too, which is nice to see. I think that inflates the numbers as well.
Well, here's the thing. Without Panarin, what does that season look like for you? Because it seemed like every time you needed your puck on your stick, it was there. Every time you needed the right guy to pass to, he was there. I'm not taking anything away from Anisimov, but you and Panarin had something special all year long.
Yeah, he's a special player. I think there's you know, a lot of similarities in both of our games. We want to, you know, come up the ice with the puck and want to play that puck possession game, you know, want to be able to make plays. And, you know, as far as, you know, him coming into the league and being a first-year player, it's pretty amazing what he's done in his rookie season. So I've had a lot of fun with him, getting to know him. I think we mess around with each other a lot. We have a good relationship, and I think that translates on the ice as well.
Patrick, what's the significance for you of the Art Ross Trophy as the first U.S.-born player to win it?
Do you notice Ennett's given it to you already? Dave Ennett's given it to you.
No, they are. He's already won that.
I know. Okay. Waiting for the ceremony.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty special. I mean, you know, you think of all the great American players that have played in the NHL and then played hockey. It's kind of hard to believe no one's won it before. But, you know, I think it's probably something that maybe will sink in a little bit more down the road. I think it's something as a hockey player and an offensive guy you try to envision yourself to be able to do. So, like I said, I was fortunate and lucky this year to play with, you know, great players and also to have the support of my teammates all season two. So it was, you know, obviously couldn't have done it without them.
Let's go back a year. On the eve of the playoffs, you had missed 21 games. You're coming back from your injury, and I know there had to be a little apprehension awaiting that first hit when you went out on the ice against Nashville. Now fast forward to the eve of the playoffs now. How much different is this from how you felt a year ago going in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, I think it's totally different. You know, you're coming into the regular season, the postseason, you know, feeling confident about your game and confident at where it's been all season long. You know, last year I thought I was having a great season up until the injury, and then, you know, like you said, you missed the final 21 games of the season. It's almost like you have to teach yourself to play hockey again. So I think there was some a little bit of nervousness for that first hit, and then once you kind of get that out of the way and take a couple hits, I think it's, you know, good for yourself and good for, you know, where your game's heading. So I was happy with the way I performed in the playoffs last year, but I think it's you know, totally different to where I'm at this year, and hoping for you know, bigger and better things, and hopefully, you know, helping this team to do well in the playoffs, have a long stretch run again, and you know, see if Matt.
Andre, you got a question?
I do. Kane or Panarin could actually become the first Hawks player to win the Calder Trophy as the league's top rookie since you won it in 07 and 08. Do you ever tell him, you know, you'll never be me? You got a lot of competition, dude.
You can tell him anything. He won't understand it.
I was telling him that I was 18 and 19 years old my rookie season. He's 24, so I call him the old man rookie, and he gets all upset about that. But he's a funny kid. I mean, we have, you know, there's probably, you know, 5-6 stories you could tell about him every day that would crack you up. But he's very happy, very excited to be around the rink all the time, and very focused as well.
Well, your focus has been tremendous all year long, and I know it's going to continue to be against the Blues and into the playoffs. You guys have seen these guys a bunch. You see them every year a bunch. This is a different team than last year. Does it feel the same going into tomorrow night?
I think there's similarities and differences. I think you know, they're still kind of that big, heavy team that likes to play physical, which St. Louis has always been. I think they have probably a lot more depth than they've had in the past years, and, you know, probably a little extra motivation to get past the first round. They've been one of the best, if not the best, regular season team in the league for the past 5 years, and, you know, now you see that they haven't gotten out of the first round for a little bit here, so. I'm sure they're excited about getting that opportunity and getting that chance. And, you know, for us, we'll try to stop them at a halt and hopefully, you know, have a good series against them and, you know, take it one game at a time, not get too ahead of ourselves about thinking about, you know, back-to-back runs or anything like that. This is a tough team, one of the best teams in the league. We're going to have our hands full and get ready for that first game in St. Louis, see what happens the rest of the way.
I know you got a meeting coming up. I don't want to get you in trouble with Q. Imagine if we got Kaner bench for the first game. That wouldn't be good.
Yeah, I don't think that would be good at all.
But we have an MB Financial Bank listener question here. This is from Linda King. Says, you and Panarin have an amazing chemistry on the ice with precise passing like I've never seen. How much time do you have to spend, just the two of you, on specific passing and passes before a game or during the season?
Well, we go through, you know, after practice, we'll always kind of do a few different drills where we're working our one-timers or different passes, moving in stride, things like that. We have a couple set passes we do in warm-ups before the game, probably about six or seven different passes to try and get us warmed up with each other, how we're going to, you know, read and react, different things like that, how we're going to accept the passes. But not too much, actually. It's more of, I think, you know, more of our relationship on the ice comes through, if you can believe it or not, talking to each other and trying to get a feel of each other, what they're thinking throughout that game. So he's actually had some really good ideas this year, and, you know, I try to give him some information as well.
Yeah, and since you got two Russians on your line, how do you communicate with the two of them? Have you learned a little bit, or is it just puck is internationally translatable?
You know, he's actually, he probably has, let's, probably understands a little more English than he probably lets on. So I can talk to him in English. I just kind of have to speak words that he understands. And, right. You know, there's, you know, it's getting better throughout the year. And if there's really something that I need to say to him, he can always just translate it through an Anisimov, which we probably did more towards the beginning of the season. And, you know, now we can just talk one-on-one in English.
Have a great series, man. Keep it going, and we look forward to it. Yes, Dave?
You didn't ask him the key question you wanted to ask him.
Which one was that?
We going to see the mullet?
You know what? I think I'm going to skip the mullet this year.
That's big news. That's breaking news.
the first time I did it, I couldn't grow a beard, so now I can grow somewhat of a beard, so... Going to skip it. Things are going good this year, so I don't really want to change too much up, to be honest with you.
Listen, dude, as old as you're getting, pretty soon your hair is going to be your problem, not facial hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a great time. Stay healthy.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. That's Patrick Kane. Kaner. You look at the numbers for his season. Ridiculous. It's just tremendous.
I want the mullet.
There's a sentence you won't hear every day. I want the mullet. We have a special guest in studio. We'll meet next ahead of Bill and Wendy. Stand by for that on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Ryan Burroughs here from WGN News. Who's your new friend, Ryan?
Hey, guys. Well, I'll let her introduce herself, because I don't know if I get the proper pronunciation.
Your name is?
Right? Go ahead.
My name is Eliza.
Eliza.
Yeah.
There you go, Eliza.
And Eliza does radio news in Berlin.
Yes.
Why am I asking you? She speaks English.
She's right here.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm doing radio news in Berlin and in Hamburg.
And what is your last name?
Lanschek.
Of course it is.
Yes.
In covering news in Berlin, is it like here we're all politics crazy? We talk about politics all the time?
Yeah, exactly. We are talking about politics also. We are talking about politics in Berlin and in Germany and also in the U.S. So that's for us.
Okay, well, that leads to this question.
Yeah, I have to ask you, what do you think of our political process so far and the candidates?
Get to the point. What do you think of?
Specifically Donald Trump.
Oh, I don't know. So if I think of my first reaction when I heard that it's Donald Trump, he was a candidate for the presidency, first reaction was laughing. So I was like, no, that's a joke. Second reaction was like, shock. Oh, this is real. This is maybe real. So they mean it's serious. So
the politicians that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, what do they think of the Trump thing?
Same thing, I think.
Kind of shocked.
So, and no one knows really what to do with it.
Well, we're great allies. The last thing we need is to mess that up. So I would assume they're not all that comfortable with a Trump presidency idea?
What?
So, your politician's not so comfortable with the idea of Trump?
No, not really, no.
Got it.
When I was there, and I did the same program that she's doing, but in Germany, and the questions we would always get asked from the Germans was, are you guys serious?
Yeah. Right.
You know, is this for real? And then it's interesting, though, you know, as far as international politics go, a lot of the countries just want things to stay the same because it's more predictable then.
Sure.
So, you know, anything like a Trump, you know, would just kind of throws all that off. So I would assume most countries would probably want something that's very, very similar to what Barack Obama's put into place.
Wouldn't you think, Ryan?
I would think.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy your time in Chicago.
Thank you.
We like Ryan. He's a good guy, so he'll steer you in the right direction.
Okay.
Yeah. Bratwurst.
Bratwurst.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's all I got.
Yeah. And I think they're going to a Cubs game tomorrow night, too. So
are you?
On the right track.
Yeah. Nice.
We'll give that a shot.
Safe travels. You're welcome anytime.
Thank you.